What's up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe. Yes, of course, it is me, Jonathan, one of your hosts, and as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie McLean.
Hello there.
So, yay, on this episode, we have another three-peat. The man from Big Trouble and Trainspotting is making another appearance on the podcast. That is the man himself, Mr. Jamie Walker.
Hello, Jamie three times, Jamie three times, Jamie three times.
Nice reference to the film, I like it. So yeah, for those of you who aren't familiar with the podcast, this might be the first episode that you check out. We are doing a podcast based on 100 Must See Cult Movies poster, where we invite a guest on to pick a film off the list to come in and talk about a little bit more and from a kind of deeper standpoint. So Jamie, what film did you pick for this time?
I've chosen Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas. I nearly said The Goodfellas, but it just makes it sound like a 2000s indie band. Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas is what I've chosen.
Never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Hey, Mom, what do you think?
You look like a gangster.
I know I'd
By the time I grew up, there was $30 billion a year in cargo moving through Idlewild Airport. Believe me, we tried to steal every bit of it.
What do you do?
I'm in construction.
He's not Jewish.
Mazel tov.
For most of the guys, killing's got to be accepted.
Hey, Henry, here's an arm.
Very funny, guys.
Here's a leg.
Here's a wing. What do you like, the leg or the wing? It's you.
Us to live any other way was nuts. And we were treated like movie stars with muscle. We had it all just for the asking.
It's gonna be a good summer.
It was a glorious time.
In a world that's powered by violence, on the streets where the violent have power, a new generation carries on an old tradition.
There we go. First question, as always, why are you Goodfellas, Jimmy?
Do you want the honest answer or do you want the arty answer? The arty answer is it's a film that I really have always loved since the first time I saw it. The honest answer is I was sat last Saturday watching it with a few beers in me and I texted Jonathan and went, can I come on and take Goodfellas, please? And that's the honest answer, is because I was watching it, enjoying it, and having a couple of beers with it. I would really want to talk about this film at length. So, aye, that was the reason.
Well, there we go. Kenzie, have you seen it before? First watch for the podcast?
I have seen this before. I'm actually trying to remember when the first time I saw this was, and I actually can't remember at all. Could have been like somewhere between like 2017 to like 20. Surely not 2020, 2029. Nah, surely not that long. So I think it's a second watch, but maybe a third. I'm not too sure. I definitely have seen it before once at least. So it's not a first watch.
Well, I have seen this film multiple times. I own a copy of the DVD, which I had to watch last night because it's not available on anything to stream, I don't think.
This is not.
Unless somebody's... What's that?
It's not anymore.
No, was it on something before? Like,
it used to be on Netflix.
Used to be on Sky Movies, and I taped it off BBC. It could be on iPlayer, but I definitely taped it off BBC over Christmas. That's where I watched
normally
it.
Tells you. Yeah. But if you've got Sky and a Skybox, you just get to keep it if you record it. Even if it leaves, I see how it works. But this is why I love physical media. I've actually subscribed to my Empire magazine again, which is great. I'm waiting on my first one coming in. I can't wait. Physical media is great because you can always go back to it. I have seen this film numerous times and I always, always, always thought that I really liked this film. But see, when I watched it again for this podcast, quickly realised that Martin Scorsese has done way better films than this film. Is that a hot take? Because I think a lot of people think this could be one of his best.
If not the best, a lot of people. It's like this or Taxi Driver, I guess most people would say.
Fuck, seriously?
I would think so. Yeah.
Usually this, Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, are usually the
I don't think I would have them in my top 10.
I definitely wouldn't have Taxi Driver in my top 10.
Oh, Kenzie hates the Taxi Driver.
I don't hate it. I just don't think it's very good. Mean Streets all the way. It's a much better film.
Mean Streets is a decent wee film. But I think it kind of goes under the radar.
Generally, I'm not a huge Scorsese fan. Generally, I can appreciate everything all his films do and the themes and the way everything's filmed. But when I actually think about Martin Scorsese films, like if I'm going to sit down and watch another one, this is the only one that I rewatch. I don't think I've rewatched any of the rest of them in a long time, at least.
I've just had a weird thought, because I struggled to watch The Irishman when it came out, right? It's a super long film. And kind of, not like Goodfellas, but in a way it kind of is in a weird way. And I think now rewatching this, I understand that I just maybe don't like Martin Scorsese gangster films. Granted, I've not watched Casino in a long time, and maybe I should watch that before I make that an official statement. But yeah, this is probably a hot take to anybody listening, but this wouldn't be in my top 10 Martin Scorsese films. I have a lot of trouble watching this film. I have a lot of issues with it. But we'll get to that in a hot minute, as they say.
Really,
but
not
for
in
any of what's
not,
that?
Not in your top 10? Like, I mean, I don't know how many films the Scorsese made.
Probably like 35.
Really? Oh, I mean, I guess he has been about for ages.
Mate, he's just about to make Killers of the Flower Moon, and that, to be honest, well, he's making it, and it's coming out this year. And I would probably even put that in my top 10 without even seeing it before I would put Goodfellas in it. I don't violently dislike Goodfellas, but I mean, he's not done 35 films. He's done what? Probably like 20 something. I can't add up that quick, but about 20 something. No, there's I don't know. I think Killers of the Flower Moon, it's not out yet. Silence is the most underrated Scorsese film that he's ever made. I think it's the best looking Scorsese film ever.
What would be your top Scorsese film?
Mine?
Yeah.
It would be a toss up between The Departed and Gangs of New York for me.
I'm not that bothered about Gangs of New York.
And I actually quite like The Last Temptation of Christ. It's a kind of fucked up biblical film, which Willem Dafoe in that movie is fucking incredible. If you've not seen that, I highly recommend Last Temptation of Christ. But yeah, we are moved on to ranking fucking Martin Scorsese movies before actually talking about the film that we're here to talk about.
That's also two Jesus films mentioned back to back in episodes. Like, you were talking about Jim Caviezel in the RoboCop episode.
Oh, fucking hell, so we were. Right, he just disappeared. At least Willem Dafoe had a good career after playing a biblical character. Anyway, for those of you who don't know, this film is based off the Nicholas Pileggi novel Wise Guy, which I think I own a copy of that as well, which is kind of weird. Never read it. I'm not a big reader. Surprise, surprise. I really like watching movies. And it stars such acting talent as Rob De Niro, Ray Liotta, Joe Pesci, Lorraine Bracco, and Paul Sorvino. To say the least, there's numerous other people that you'll be familiar with in other Scorsese films, probably, is where you'll see them mostly. A la Billy Bats. Rip Billy Bats in the movie. It's one of the best scenes in the film, though. I'm not going to lie. This film should be fucking, like, right up my street, considering I'm a big Godfather fan. Like, I love The Godfather. But The Godfather's a lot slower, but you know what you're getting yourself into. But this is kind of weirdly paced, and I don't know how you guys feel about the pacing of this film. It's really bizarre.
I quite like the pacing of it, but then when I'm going to sit down and watch Goodfellas, I clear the schedule for it. You kind of just stick it on and for an hour and a half. And I think in my previous ones with Big Trouble and Trainspotting, I mentioned that I always think an hour and a half is a good... If I'm wanting to go and sit and watch a film, an hour and a half's like my ideal length. But with Goodfellas, that's one of the few long films where I'll make an effort, because what's it, 2 hours and 20 minutes, two and a half hours?
Something like that.
Films that I do that way, but I quite like... The story kind of goes all over the place, but I think generally it fills the time quite good, particularly if you're, like I said, if you're having a couple of beers watching it, and then, because it kind of just, there's a bit where you're like, right, this is getting a bit slower now, I can go and nip to the loo and get another drink, come back, and not really much has happened, like, you kind of know, so
I think, yeah, there is time jumps in the film, but it does follow, like, a linear kind of story pattern. Like, we start as, well, if I had to lie, we do actually start in a bit of a jump, was it a flash forward? Who is it they've got in the boot?
I think it's Billy Bats at the start, huh?
Is that Billy Bats in the boot at the start?
I think it is, huh?
Kenzie, do you want to weigh in here?
I don't remember the names. Billy, if he's the made man that they kill, then yeah.
With the white hair?
Yeah.
Billy Bats is the guy that tells Joe Pesci's character to go and get his shine box.
Yeah, it's him. It's him.
All right, okay. Because then it's got the eponymous line. What is that? From what is it Henry says? It's like,
for something time, longest time or something. I've always wanted to be a gangster.
Ever since I can remember, I wanted to be a gangster.
That's
and
it.
Then you get it cuts to little kid people.
Little kid
which
people.
I genuinely thought went on for about an hour of this film. But it
goes on longer than you remember, yeah.
It's only 20 minutes of the film.
Still, I didn't even think it was 20 minutes. I thought it was like 5 minutes the last time I watched it. Like, yeah.
Strange. That's another thing. Pacing, Kenzie, you've never weighed in. Do you like how the film's paced in this?
It's bizarre. This film is an hour shorter than The Irishman, but feels just as long.
Oh my god. That's, The Irishman was about 7.5 days long.
Like, exactly. This feels the same length. It's an hour. It's a whole like hour shorter. Like, I don't get it. Like, I'm always like kind of weird with Scorsese films. Like when you said we're gonna be doing Goodfellas, I was like, I don't really know if I want to watch it. And I'm
Dickface, you're the co-host of the podcast. I didn't want to watch all these films either.
No, I know, but I mean, like,
no,
I know we have to.
Do you know what? Maybe I'll just dip out of this one, like you've done before.
But
do you know what? I didn't quite fancy watching The Godfather. Can you just take this one?
I was just like, I'm like that with like a lot of Scorsese films. I just never feel like in the right kind of mood to watch them. But once like I put Goodfellas on, I got like right into it like really quickly. But it does, it definitely does start to drag. I'm still entertained by the film. It just feels like it's on for a very, very, very long time. But I still really enjoy the film. Like, I would much rather watch this over watching The Godfather as... I've said a few times.
I was saying to Johnny earlier, like about you've got to be in the mood for this, like, and I probably watch this maybe once every couple of years, but I never watch it during the summertime. I never watch it during spring. It's always like when it's winter time, it's dark outside, I've got nowhere to go, not a day, tours, just sit down and escape with it. Like, it's definitely one for like you have to be in the exact mood for it, or else. I think you could maybe get about 20 minutes into it and go, ugh, can't be bothered.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Maybe I wasn't in the right frame of mind to watch it, but I just don't remember this as fondly as I once maybe did many years ago. Or maybe my taste in film has changed over time. I don't know. It's a hard one to kind of try and understand. Second of all, the fucking narration. Like, I understand films having narration, but does it need to be throughout the whole fucking film?
I like
and I know that it's from his point of view, like Henry Hill's point of view, but it's so much. Like, there's so much off-camera dialogue that's like been done in a fucking booth somewhere.
There's not many films as well that have got two narrators, which this one has. This has got Lorraine Bracco and
really
Ray Liotta. Yeah. There's not many films that have got two narrators, which is a really unusual choice. I think it's all right. I mean, I do really like it.
I'm just going to point that out. It's another thing I don't really like. Also, was watching it there before Jamie came in. Why does it freeze frame when he blows up the cars?
It freeze frames a lot.
But maybe I just noticed that, and he says that, oh, my mum never had to carry bags, it was out of respect, and I'm like, but why did it freeze frame on, like, a weird shot, I don't know. There's loads of confusing things. It's like the time jump as well, so they obviously want to make this film span a number of years. But it's like, I had it on before Kenzie was ready to record, Jamie came in, and we were at the bit where they got married and they were having, like, parties and shit. And then all of a sudden it started to kind of go on to just still images of family photos, and it was Robert De Niro and Ray Liotta, like, at a party, as if somebody took them with a camera back in the 80s. Now, that's fucking weird. They are not related in this. I get that's the part of the film, but it's kind of strange. I mean... I don't know. I can't, like, this is a hot fucking take, because I think there's a lot of people out here that are going, but this is Martin Scorsese's masterpiece, and I just can't get on board with it. In all honesty,
it's weird. I think it's filmed weird. Like the freeze frames, like I said, the first half of the film has like a lot of them. I actually quite like the narration a lot in this film. I think it carries it a lot for me. I think the narration is really good, especially like how you also get the narration of his wife as well. I think it was a really cool thing to have in the film. But for me, that's one of the kind of best parts of the film is the whole kind of narration through it, because it helps you really, takes you through like what he's thinking at the time and kind of journeys you through it. I do really enjoy that.
Here's a question. Did the Irishman have narration in it? I can't really remember.
I can't remember. I'm trying to remember. Yes, it did.
I was just saying, like, if you think Goodfellas is kind of strange and long just now, imagine what it would have been like with less narration. It would have been even slower, and there would have been like lingering shots of like people going to kids' birthday parties for like 10 minutes with like nae context as to why they were at a kid's birthday party, or like just being introduced to about 20 people with nae context as to why they were being introduced to 20 people.
I don't know, like, I think that's strange, though, because what they've done is they've cut out all the ambient audio that would be at a thing like that, and they've just, like, overdubbed it with narration. Now, you might say, oh, it would make it longer, and I'm like, well, maybe make your film tighter and maybe have less shots in it than if you think it's going to be too, like, long or too fat or feel too slow. It's just you can't hide that with narration, unfortunately, in my opinion. I don't think it makes the film better in any way. This is a film as well that there's a lot of people bring up a lot of techniques that were used making this film, and looking at it now, like, what is it, 30 odd years down the line, I think films have got much better. Like, much, much better.
Do you know what it was maybe a bit like, right? You know, like, rock bands in the 70s and 80s, right? They would do double albums. And, like, you go back and listen to some of these experimental double albums for the 70s and 80s, right? And you'd maybe get the odd single on it, but usually it was, like, vast, sprawling double albums with just, like, really strange choices for songs and stuff. And you're like, you could have cut that down to one, like just a regular album with like 11 tracks on it. It didn't need to be a double album. Like, I sometimes think Goodfellas is a bit like that. Like, it's one of the albums where you're like, it's Norio got a single off it. It's got, maybe it does have singles off it, I suppose, but it's like, it's got its maybe two or three hits through the film, and it's just populated by like weird album tracks that people just kind of skip or whatever. Like, I think that's maybe a good comparison to it. Like,
I mean, yeah, it just tries to take you through everything the film does. It's the same kind of, the Irishman does like the kind of same thing. It takes you literally from when Henry Hill was like a teenager up until, well, the end of the kind of story. That's kind of one thing about this film as well. I think this is kind of true about a lot of kind of films that are based on true stories. As this film just goes until it stops suddenly. Like, there's no ending to this film, it just ends.
Alright, when like, he oh, says that he's going to be like a schnook for the rest of his life. Because he's ratted on all his pals like a big rat that he is. The rat, they should have fucking bumped him off when they had the chance.
It's just, yeah, it's
I think a lot. How did he get away with it, though? How did he manage to get away? Like, how? Did he start working undercover as a snitch? Is that how he managed to evade getting whacked like Tommy?
Just went straight into the FBI witness program.
It's just protection.
Yeah, true story. It's, I mean, it is fucking a true story. Isn't it?
What a rat, by the way. But why, like, why did he all of a sudden decide that he didn't want to be a gangster anymore?
I don't think he decided. Killed. I don't think he decided. I think the FBI had enough on him that says, right, come and work with us or you're getting bumped.
The whole thing, it had no other choice. Robert De Niro's person, whatever his name is, just his name Jimmy?
Jimmy was just gone.
He's just, he was going to kill him. It really seemed like he was going to kill him. It was just, everything seemed like it. From what happened to his wife when he's telling her to go round the corner, and it just seems really dodgy, to the fact that Jimmy all of a sudden gave Henry a contract to kill someone, which he's never done before, to go, and he's got a, well, Jimmy's never given him a contract to do that, and he's got to go up to, like, was it Florida or something. He knew it straight away. He's like, oh, I'm dying if I go on that. It's just, I don't know, it's, given Jimmy's track record as well, I think he was like a dead man. There was not much he could really do, so I think he, and instead he just, decided FBI is the only.
Well, maybe he should have stopped being a fucking rampant cokehead and just maybe stuck to the kind of the code of the mob, you know, instead of turning out to be what he ended up being. Like, I understand why Tommy got whacked, because he just was a mouthy little arse, like, you know, couldn't he shut up, essentially. And obviously, I mean, I don't, this is a world that we don't live in, we're just speculating here, but I can understand why somebody like that would get whacked. All you do is talk.
Is any of you guys worried that, like, we're saying the words FBI and whacked a lot on a recording that's going to go out on the internet, that we might get a chap at the door at some point?
Possibly, but we'll find out.
I ain't saying nothing for the rest of the podcast.
Anybody, are we?
No, definitely not.
We should say it right now, so they know, just in case the FBI are like... Yeah. Would the FBI be listening to us? That's what I don't know about that.
Possibly not.
Stop saying FBI and whacked.
We're all wise guys. We're made men.
Oh, didn't say things like that, though. That will get us shut down. That's it. Cancelled.
So the podcast should have just been, this is a Goodfellas podcast, we ain't saying nothing, and then that's it, end of podcast.
possibly could have been that, yeah.
We ain't no rats.
Fuck's sake. But Henry Hill is a rat, though.
I mean, I guess, yeah. In the end, I think by that point he was kind of fucked. I don't think he had much more choice other than to die, I guess. It seemed from the way that he portrays it, I mean, of course, this is all by his word. So you gotta, like, because it's based on the book. Is it? Who wrote the book?
Nicholas Pileggi.
It was based on the true story of Henry Hill. Like, Henry Hill was a real...
Henry Hill's a real person. Real,
yeah, but like, what was Henry, how did he get so much of the information? Did he, like, ever speak to Henry Hill or stuff like that?
I think it was, like, for a series of interviews with him, if I remember.
Aye, because it's a non-fiction, it's a crime reporter. Nicholas Pileggi was a crime reporter that chronicles the life of Henry Hill, a mafia associate turned informant. Yeah,
so all the stuff that Henry Hill is saying is all from his perspective, and it's his kind of leeway on it. So can it all be taken as this is how exactly everything happened? Well, probably not, but...
No, but I mean...
In his eyes, at that moment, that's what he felt, and that's why he did whatever he did. So, yeah.
True. Very true. Do you have anything else to add to this portion of the podcast, or are we happy to share our thoughts and give it a rating out of the old 5 popcorn bucketos?
I feel like I've covered most of the things I'd like to say about it.
I just brought up things that I didn't like about it, so.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I've got one more thing to mention. I noticed a lot of shots that, I've noticed a lot of things recently, but this one's got quite a lot of them. The amount of times where, like, you'll see in one shot, the person, like facing away has got, like, a cigar in their mouth, and then the next shot is gone. That happens so much in this film. Like, so much. It's so funny. It's like they have something in their mouth or something and it's gone. It's like, what's happening? I've just started noticing it recently with, like, other, like, shows and films, because that does happen. It will tend to happen from time to time. It's just that this film seems to have quite a lot of it at times. But yeah, bar that, I still really enjoy this film. I'm actually glad to revisit it because I enjoyed it more than I remembered enjoying it, although I knew I liked it.
I'm the same. I mean, I still really love this film. I still really enjoy watching it for the most part. There is times where you're watching it and you're going, it is a bit slow, but I always think it's generally excellent to look at. The soundtrack's phenomenal. The acting in it is brilliant. Like, I can't fault any... There's not one character in it that you look at and go, oh, that character's annoying. But so I still really enjoy it overall.
And I'm quite happy to say that I will take my DVD out of the Blu-ray player, put it back in its case, stick it in my DVD collection, and probably never revisit this film ever again. Unless somebody forces me to watch it again and to come on and talk about it, or to fucking break it down further. I mean, I don't know. I hate to be this guy.
You really did not like it this time, did you?
Yeah, I mean, see, what I say, I don't know why. Like, I quite like gangster films, and I actually really do enjoy gangster films. I mean, I gave The Godfather 5 out of 5. Short horror. Like, I really enjoyed The Godfather. I mean, and talking about, well, this isn't 80s, this came out in 1990, but if I was to pick an 80s made gangster film to watch, and I was going to invest a sizable amount of time, I'd watch Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America. Not the fucking theatrical cut, though. You need to watch the full version. It's much longer than this film, but it's fucking incredible, and it spans. It's got enough time to span 50 years, which I love. Whereas this, it's kind of like this period of time's over. Let's cut and then put titles. Oh, it's 1970 now. Well, where did the last 5 years go? Okay. Nobody cares, and it's like, oh, fair enough.
Have you seen Donnie Brasco?
I've seen Donnie Brasco. So, that's a 90s film.
So Donnie Brasco is like. I really love Donnie Brasco as well.
Joseph Pistone.
But yeah. it's like a bizarro version of Goodfellas, where it's tightly cut. Instead of Robert De Niro, you've got Al Pacino. Instead of Ray Liotta, you've got Johnny Depp.
Aye.
And it's just tighter.
I think Donnie Brasco's a better film than this.
A lot of folk, like...
I think it's better for me.
See, looking back at the two of them, I hadn't watched Donnie Brasco for ages and watched it like last year, and I was like, oh shit, that film's way good. Like, it's tremendous. Like,
really good. Johnny Depp has moments where I understand why he's a really good actor, but they're pretty few and far between like these days. But that's a really good performance. I think it's before he became really known for being so wacky and out there, and Captain Jack, I suppose, kind of changed the brand of Johnny Depp. But no, I really like Donnie Brasco. But no, if I was to watch like a gangster film that was going to span a number of decades, I would. Once Upon a Time in America is hands down like my shout for that. Such a good film. Anyway, we're just going to jump on to the reviews and we'll rate it out of 5. I'll go first, seeing as used to were waxing lyrical about the film. I've obviously picked up my gripes with this film. I think it's really weirdly paced. I don't really like the narration. I mean, I don't have anything against the cast or anything like that. I feel as though like that's all good. And, you know, Martin Scorsese is one of the best filmmakers ever. But I just feel as though he's got a number of films that I much prefer and think are far, far, far better films than this one. And I'm probably alone on an island out there on my own, or there might be a couple people on it, but... I know that if people listen to this, people will be really maybe shocked to see where I'm going with this. So, yeah, I'm like, this is still a good film. I'm not saying it's terrible, but I'm never going to get anywhere near the highs of where some people might put this. I'm just going to go solid 3 out of 5 for me. I just think it's an average film, and if we ever get to a stage where we deep dive directors. Sort of filmography and careers, Scorsese might be an interesting one to see, because I like a lot of his more recent films, and in all honesty, maybe not The Irishman, because it's maybe too close to this one, but I'm eagerly anticipating Killers of the Flower Moon. I loved Wolf of Wall Street. Silence is probably one of his most underrated films. Shutter Island's probably one of the best films of the last 15 years for me. Plot twist, though, once you've seen it once, you'd know the twist, but it's an incredible film. The Departed, to name a few. But yeah, so that's just, it's a 3 out of 5 for me. I'll let one of you guys go next then.
That's 4 and a bit for me. It's no quite 5 out of 5. It's no perfect. Like, it's no Big Trouble in Little China.
You're giving it a 4.5.
So I 4 and a bit. So I'll round it up to 4.5.
Like. 4 and a bit. A bit isn't a thing. It's either half or no.
Well, it's no more than 4.5. So aye, 4. We'll go 4.5. Like, aye, it's really good. I love pretty much everything about it. That's got its flaws. Like, I mean, it's no perfect, but it's still top tier for me. Like.
That was short and sweet. Kenzie, weigh in.
I really like this film. If it kept up as it did for like the first half of this film, I really like, it would be like a 4.5, but I think the last kind of half, kind of, it starts running dry as there's less and less story to be told. Gets a bit slow. Still enjoyable, but it does, it slugs. It really does. I would much rather watch I actually much prefer The Irishman over this film, and I know a lot of people will be like, what? But I do. I really like The Irishman a lot. I loved it. I think it's a much... It's weird to say, I think it's an easier watch. It's very long. It's still, you still feel the length in that film, but I felt more entertained the whole way through with that film. I think it's just a more interesting story as well than Goodfellas. But I would still give Goodfellas a 4. I think the first part, the first kind of half of it is still like superb. It just starts to kind of trail at the end and then comes to a complete halt. But honestly, it's still a very good film. Definitely would rather watch this over other gangster films like The Godfather, which I'm not really a big fan of. Yeah, it's a very good film.
Right, so there we have it. I knew I was going to be out on an island on this podcast, so it's a 3 out of 5 for me. It's a 4 out of 5 for Kenzie, and a 4.5 out of 5 for Jamie.
4 and a bit, actually.
We'll say it's 4 and a bit, but half measures, right? Right, that is it for this section of the podcast. We will now move swiftly on to the rules section of the podcast, where we break the film down using 6 metrics here at the podcast. They are low budget / box office flop, rewatchability, quotability, not well received by contemporary critics / reviewers, explores controversial topics, subjects and themes, and the cultural impact and legacy of the movie. So we will kick it off swiftly with low budget / box office flop. $25 million budget, grossed $47.1 million. Is that a successful film?
I'm surprised. I'm actually kind of surprised. I thought it would have made a little bit more.
I think it's a decent-sized budget, though.
It's a decent budget. That's a decent-sized budget. It's definitely not low.
Nah.
I'm surprised at the budget, to be honest, for how the film looks. It looks like it's a bit cheaper, but no, it's...
Fucking hell. But think about the acting talent and the how much.
I mean,
is,
of course.
How
yeah.
much is Martin Scorsese getting paid? How much is Robert De Niro getting paid for this? You know, like, you've got to factor that in. When we brought up, bringing up the Fight Club episode, when we spoke about that, of its $60 million budget, a third of it was, well, in fact, half of it was paid for Edward Norton and Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt got paid $50 million for Fight Club. And Edward Norton got 5, I think, or 2.5, something like that. It was a sizable amount of money. 15.
Fucking.
15 or like 17.5. I think combined they got 20 million. But Edward Norton wasn't Edward Norton now. Like, he was on the come up. American History X obviously threw him right into superstardom. Cracking film if you've not watched it. Check it out. And he is incredible in it because he plays two sides of a coin immaculately well, which I love. But yeah, it's a strange one. Based on today, the film would have cost around 55, 60 million. You probably aren't making this film for that. The Irishman's budget was like 150, 200, something like that. Get that Netflix money. Martin Scorsese, right, just wanted to bring this up, is he is on record, I'm pretty sure, complaining about superhero movies, how they changed the movie industry, and how movies just aren't the same anymore. And I don't know if he ever, I don't know this accurately or not, but I wonder if he'd complained about streaming services ruining the movie industry, considering these last two films, one was a Netflix movie that he got paid a fuck ton of money to do, and Killers of the Flower Moon's an Apple production. So
it's an Apple one? Wow, he's really selling out, damn.
Yeah, but that where's giving you the money to make the film you want to make? I think that's maybe you just go to the highest bidder. Look at my favourite filmmaker of all time, Christopher Nolan. When he left his sort of agreement with Warner Brothers after Tenet, he essentially had a list of, this is what I want to make my next film, and if you don't give me it, you're not getting me. That's essentially what these movie makers can do.
Do you know, while you were talking there, I thought, kind of jumped in my head, I hadn't looked at this, right? I had a look at the October 1990 film sort of charts for the States. So you said this made about 45 million.
Goodfellas, 47.1.
Right. So for October 1990, Goodfellas brought in $21 million in the cinema in America. It was only beaten by two films, one Marked for Death, which I no
the Steven Seagal movie.
And the second one was Ghost, which Ghost was a mega hit.
That was a huge hit.
And that made $25 million the same month. So Goodfellas wasn't far behind Ghost.
Right, like, in the first month of release, pretty much.
Aye, pretty much.
Month
yeah.
and a half or so.
But then it seemed that it's like it's got half its money in that first month and then just...
Kind of, it's what happens. It's just, box offices were a lot different by then. Now,
to be fair, though, it says here, right, so it says Goodfellas, $21 million total gross, 46. Ghost made $24 million that month. Its total gross is $217 million.
That's the thing. Like, a film like Ghost will sustain like 4 or 5 months in the movie theatres.
And yes, Marked for Death, Steven Seagal made $35 million that month.
Aye, so that's what I'm saying. Fucking hell. And see, that's strange, Marked for, it's actually one of the better Steven Seagal films, but nowhere, it's not as good as even Goodfellas. I'm not sure I even like Ghost all that much. It's not a film for me. But I get why Ghost grossed more overall, because I've been in movie theatres for a longer period of time. It's like Top Gun Maverick made $1.5 billion last year, but was in movie theatres for like 6 months. There was nothing else to compete with it, because we've just came out of a pandemic. They're not releasing films the way that they were. So it had such a like free run at the box office to make as much money. Avatar, the new Avatar's kind of done the same, came out over Christmas time and nothing was really released to challenge it. Probably an astute decision from every other studio, because who really wants to go up against the sequel to the highest grossing film of all time? But yeah, this year looks quite interesting. I think the slate of films that's coming out, there's quite a lot of films coming out in 2023, which I'm quite interested about. I think the balance is maybe swinging back to movie theatres over streaming services, and I know there's a lot of things going direct to streamer and stuff like that, but yeah. Anyway, back on the budget, you couldn't make this film for the budget that it would have been equated for in 2023, like 56, 57 million. The box office would be about 105 to 110 million. I don't think it was profitable, but I suppose, are these types of films ever going to be profitable? And that's back to The Godfather. It was the highest grossing film of all time until Jaws, maybe, or Star Wars. But it was for a few years anyway in the 70s. So gangster movies did have a market and could have made loads of money. It's just, yeah, I don't know. Is Martin Scorsese a film director that's based his career on making box office hits? Probably not. So that's a bit of a hard one. I don't think there's much more to say on this topic. Unfortunately, it's quite a quick one. But yeah, I would say that it's not low budget. Is it a flop though?
No.
Well, so making twice your money, is that good enough, Joe? Just over twice your money.
Well, I think for that time,
period. Is the 3X just a more modern thing?
I think so. I think
because of the
marketing originally
involved now.
Yeah, I think you were more double your budget. Now
that's
it's
fine.
More triple.
Right, so we'll say no. Yeah. That's fine.
I'm just having a look to see where the overall top grossing movies in 1990. So Ghost was number one. Pretty Woman, Home Alone, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Repping the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
46. So, Godfather Part 3 was number 26. So there you go. Godfather 3 came in above Goodfellas. Godfather Part 3 was the 26th highest grossing film in 1990. And that came out on the 25th of December. And then Goodfellas was 36. Goodfellas was somewhere between Joe versus Volcano and Darkman. So.
Aye, but the problem is like your film release date is the year it came out. So although it would have made money in 1991, Godfather 3, because it came out in what, December 1990, because it was a 1990 film, that's why it would have been on that list. Anyway. Yeah, so, yeah, but I suppose films, the industry's changed and the budgets have kind of been blown out of proportion and what studios are hoping to recoup's kind of changed. But, yeah, we'll say no. I think we're all comfortable in saying that it's a no. I think this is probably sort of where this is going to go. Rewatchability. I've obviously got my own issues with it, so this isn't really a fair one for me to say because I don't really want to watch this film again. Well, not anytime soon anyway. It might be for a number of years before I revisit this, but you guys are probably more, like we say in the podcast, is 90 minutes, give or take, sort of maybe hour 40, hour 45, somewhere in that vicinity of time is where the... I think people have got that to invest. Very few people have got 3 hours to invest in films these days. You know, like busy schedules, lives, you've got other things to do. Do you have 3 hours in a day to sit down and watch a film? And which is kind of weird because Babylon, the Damien Chazelle movie, and Avatar, The Way of the Water were both over 3 hours long. Which I think is, are we moving towards longer format or no? Does it just depend who it is and what the film is?
It depends. It's all over the place. Every now and then, films come out that are super long. I feel like now you get them a little bit more frequent than you did in the last like 20 years. But it just happens. You get some more at a certain time, I think, and then you get less of them. Who knows? It's always like, I think the longest you'll usually see is like 3.5 and stuff like that. I don't think, I think epics, like Avatar is like kind of like an epic, and Babylon's
well, a modern
kind of
epic.
Seen,
well, like Return of the King, 3 hours, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's another one that feels like when you watch it, you're like.
Ah, but then he slander Lord of the Rings,
there's,
man.
There's
didn't
an ending.
The
but here's
slander Lord of the Rings, all I want. Man.
But here's
fucking
another ending.
Better
another
than this
ending.
Film. Fucking better than this film by a country mile.
That
by
tree
a country
cunt.
Mile.
That tree cunt in the second film can
Treebeard.
Fuck right off.
Treebeard's quality.
What oh, kick him out of the film. Who added him?
He's an imp.
Get him out.
Fuck off, man.
Oh, I went to sleep like 5 times every time you get him cutting back to him.
In my opinion, it's the best trilogy of all time. And that's
Most people would probably say that, I guess. I don't know.
Because your franchise has to still be a trilogy. It can't now have 4 or 5. And I'm not taking all of these redos where it's actually a direct sequel to the film that was made 50 years ago, so I'm deciding when the new trilogy is. Fuck that shit. No, if it's got the same title and it's based on the same character, it counts as another film in the franchise. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, back to rewatchability. Right. Off on another tangent. So, I'm not the best person to ask. You guys are probably best weighing in on this part.
So for me, like I said earlier, right, I watch this at winter time, usually, but not every year, but maybe once every 2 years I'll sit, and it's usually 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, right, I'll stick Goodfellas on a couple of beers. And I would estimate definitely the last few times I've watched it, I've probably fell asleep with about 40 minutes to go. And woke up just as like Sid Vicious comes on, and then
I forgot that was the end.
And then I wake up at the end and I'm like, oh, I missed the last half hour. Well, I'll go back and rewatch it. I'm like, nah, it's fine.
See,
that
shows you.
But that's what when Kenzie was saying earlier about like how it tails off towards the end. Like, it's like everything up until he starts getting the anxiety attack and he's out having to do like a million chores and make the tomato sauce and pick his brother up for the airport and. Like, up until that bit, it really does get slow. And then for that bit to the end, it kind of, you get a wee bit perked up again. And I think that's usually what wakes me up is, like, you can hear it getting a bit more t- tense, and then I wake up and I'm like, all right, that's me. But I watch it every couple of years, and I still enjoy it. Like, so I think it's fairly rewatchable.
I feel like it's rewatchable, but in like it's not as rewatchable as like so many other films. Like, I will rewatch this film again, but I can tell you right now, after rewatching this film, I don't want to rewatch this film for a long ass time. Like, I don't think I'll feel the need to watch this in the next few years. I don't know. In fact, I don't know when it might be years till I watch this film again. It's rewatchable, but it's like once you've seen it, you can take a huge break from it.
That's what I was saying. Like, it's like every couple of years. But I went through, like, I think I first watched this film in the mid 90s, about 1996 or something, and then I don't think I watched it again until I bought it on DVD in the early 2000s. I was saying to Johnny earlier that it's like, this is the first DVD I've ever seen where you actually had to flip the DVD halfway through because the film was so long. Like, and that's still the only film I think I've ever had to do that with. And then, I don't think I watched it for the early 2000s until I was 30, which would be like 2010. So I did go through long spells. It's only recently I've started watching it semi-regularly, so I get what you mean there, like.
Yes.
Yeah, it's weird, but it's true. It's just a long film. It is quite, and it is. It does feel it. Like, it really feels. It feels longer, to be honest. And yeah, it's a weird film. It's a good film that I will rewatch again. It's gonna be time before I do.
Well, if you two agree that it's rewatchable, then I suppose that's a tick in its favour. But yeah, like I said, I'm out on an island on this one. I'm not normally so far out on an island by myself, which is quite strange. Normally I'm on consensus, but yeah. Quotability is the next one up.
Kind of. Like, it's got some that are kind of, like, good.
A quotable film, like, because, I mean, ever since I can remember wanting to be a gangster, go get your shine box, what's the other one? The ultimate one, you call me a clown, you think I'm funny? Like, that's quoted and pastiched everywhere on, just everything. So, it's got its moments, but I suppose if the film's 6 days long, you're bound to get a couple of decent quotes at a film that's that long.
Aye, that's so, like two hours, 26 minutes long.
Aye, so yeah, nah, but like, that's it's pretty, like the bit where he takes her through the dining room and stuff, and like, the bit where she's meeting everybody in the bar, and she's like, everybody had their names, and was it Tony Two Times or whatever?
Jimmy Two Times is great. I'm going to get the papers.
Get the papers. So there's plenty of
quotes. I know somebody that repeats himself under his breath, like, every time he says something. I don't know if it's just
an
affectation. Yeah. I don't know what you'd call that. The one thing that annoys me is Jimmy Conway, never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut, is said to young Henry. And he turns out to be the guy that does rat and opens his mouth.
Aye.
So he didn't take that in, did he?
Foreshadowing.
It is foreshadowing, yeah. But I suppose the film is good in that way. I think, unlike a lot of the... unlike a lot of the other films that we've had where there's been, like, instantaneous, like, boom, or things that are shot. You know, we just done Robocop, and me and Kenzie agreed straight away when we got to this point. It's the Your Move creep bit is the best bit. There's another couple of ones. David argued against that because we were maybe just going with the popular one. But I suppose the eponymous start of this film, where as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. That's really quite memorable.
That or, you think I'm funny. Like, that scene's so good. That's probably the most quotable scene. Like,
well, that's another thing. Like, Joe Pesci in this film, Is it right? Am I saying his name right? Surely it is Pesci, right?
I think it is.
Because I know some people. Nick, who is a friend of the podcast and been on a few, he calls him Joe Pesci.
Pesci.
I mean, I don't know who's right, who's wrong, but anyway, I say Pesci.
I'm saying Pesci.
It's Pesci.
I say tomato. You say tomato. Does it really matter? Let's call the whole thing off. Anyway,
I mean, it's saying someone's name. I think you should get it right. I think it should be said right. And he calls himself Joe Pesci. Everyone calls him Joe Pesci. I've not heard a single person in the planet call him Joe Pesci. What is he? Well, a pesky insect?
Calling Nick Rick. I'm getting people's names wrong. Nick also calls Ray Liotta Ray Liotta.
Oh, no.
Why?
I don't know. It's kind of strange. Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci is like the best thing in this film, though, by quite a sizable margin. He is just like a live wire. And I think he ad-libbed a lot of stuff and he brought so much to that role.
Well, seemingly that scene was more or less kind of ad-libbed. Oh, that's hell, like, Ray Liotta was like, that's why when Ray Liotta's famous kind of laugh that's memed everywhere, like, is
because he thought it was
because he was like, he was genuinely like, are you shitting me, like, what you're saying here, like, because Joe Pesci was just that intense, like, when he was doing it, like.
Also, he's got some fly connections, old Joe Pesci, doesn't he?
Aye.
Whereas Ray Liotta was maybe just a kind of actor on the come up and didn't really expect to be sitting in a scene like that. It's probably quite right that Joe Pesci won awards for this part.
Here's a question for you, right? See the famous Leonardo DiCaprio meme, right? Where he's like smoking. What's that out of? Like, is that Wolfie Wall Street or is that something else?
Wait, where he's smoking?
Can the famous one that's always memed, that it's Leonardo DiCaprio's smug face?
Is he wearing a black tuxedo?
Aye.
It's the Great Gatsby.
Great Gatsby, right.
Because he plays Jay Gatsby in the Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, it's Baz Luhrmann then. Disregard my point. I was going to say if that and the Ray Liotta face were barefoot of Scorsese films, then that would have been pretty funny, like. But
topical discussion: is Elvis going to? I've not seen Elvis the film, but is it going to win the Oscar for Best Picture? The Baz Luhrmann biopic of Elvis with Austin Butler playing the legendary Elvis Presley. They're all talking about it because Lisa Marie's just died, sadly. That could be used as a weird kind of tactic, and I'm like, that's what happens in this. It seems immoral to me, you know, the fulfillment is these kind of, I suppose you get what you get, but
it's not as good as my screenplay for Elvish, which is about a Elvis in a fantasy world where he's just playing
an
elf.
Lord of the Rings, eh?
May be based on a world similar to Lord of the Rings and or Warhammer.
Get Henry Cavill involved. I'm pretty sure he's signed up to do loads of Warhammer shit.
I was going to aim for Bruce Campbell with a set of pointy ears, but...
Fuck's sake. Bruce Campbell, fucking hell. The meme within a meme. Yeah, it's great sense. I mean, I know who Bruce Campbell is, but it's a bit of a... So, we are... Now, I mean, do we agree that it's quotable? I would say so. Maybe it doesn't have like say the RoboCop, like say maybe Trainspotting, like say maybe Big Trouble or, you know, Flash Gordon. I mean, is it have we kind of came to the point where the better quality of the film and the better the writing within the film leads to maybe less quotable snippets of dialogue?
It's kind of true. It depends. Like, I think a lot of things about kind of quirky,
Flash
kind of
Gordon's
catch.
Fucking ass, but he's got one of the most famous kind of one-linery bits in the film.
Yeah, it's just like I think it's because he makes these little cheesy lines. The thing is, it's usually the really cheesy lines. Sometimes there's really good quotes as well, but I think like this film, most of the quotes are like very long or more than just like a few words.
They're like monologues, man.
Like, yeah, they're like monologues.
But it's
so,
the problem with having Ray Liotta fucking have a narration throughout this film is like it's hard to just pick a sentence that he says. Right.
That's very like the go get your fucking shine box and
that's a scene.
The most quotable stuff in this film is the super aggressive stuff, which can't be long. Like it has to be like go get your fucking shine box. And that's why it's, that's why you pick up on it, because you're like, oh, somebody didn't do a 3 minute like narration. So, but no, still, it's firmly mid tier. It's not, like you say, it's not top tier quotable, but the ones that are quotable are really memorable. Like,
also, I think, we're back on the film again, though. Did young Henry speak? Or was it really all as just narration the whole time?
No, I had a few lines. I definitely had a few lines. Because
I like this one about Jimmy Conway, because Jimmy was the kind of guy who rooted for the bad guys in the movies. Aye. But that's a part of a bigger narration. But I feel as though all I hear is really Otto's voice in this film. Aye. It's like, it's so part of the film. And see, the thing is if one, you don't like it, and two, you don't like his voice, you're really going to have a hard time with this film.
That's, I can't remember who it is, if it's my brother or somebody else, but they don't like this film because Lorraine Bracco's voice just goes right through him. He goes, it feels like you're getting told off by like an Italian-American mum for like tours. He goes, I just can't watch it. I'm sure it's my brother that said that. It's like he just hates her voice that much. And then when he started watching The Sopranos and she was a psychiatrist in The Sopranos, he was like, oh no, like, but he could watch that because she wasn't narrating it. So
fair. So I think we agree that it is quotable, but in its own sort of way. Not well received by contemporary critics / reviewers. Now, this is where my sort of own opinion of the film comes to be quite a stupid take, because if you look at everything across the board, I mean, you've got IMDb 8.7 out of 10. It's probably one of the top 20, 30 films to ever be rated on there. Rotten Tomatoes has got a 96% fresh rating, which is the critics' side, and a 97% audience score. The famed and probably the most famous film critic across the land, the late great Roger Ebert, reviewed this film on the 2nd of September 1990, gave it a whopping 4 out of 4. Roger loved this film. I'm a big Empire magazine stan. It's a magazine here in the UK. If you're listening to this and you're not in the UK, you probably are familiar with it if you're into films. Chris Hewitt done a review of it, and I think this is the 25th anniversary, because it came out in 2015, the review, 5 out of 5. He said, an adapted true story of life and times of Henry Hill. Look, yeah, it's one of these films, like, that I think everybody else likes apart from me. I mean, it was nominated for loads of awards, like 6 Academy Awards, nominated for 5 BAFTAs. I mean, won in numerous. It's in the Library of Congress now. So I firmly know that I'm out here on an island by myself when I say that it's a 3-star movie. I suppose yous can weigh in a bit more on this. Yous are way more in line with consensus than I am.
I think everything's fair enough. I think all the awards and stuff it was nominated for makes sense. I think all the reviews kind of broadly make sense. That's the thing. See, if somebody says, I really love this film, there's never a part of me goes, oh, no, sometimes for folks say, I really love this film. And I think probably when I say about like Big Trouble's an example, people are like that to me, like, you seriously love Big Trouble in Little China and put it in your top 10 films all the time? I'm like, aye, that's just one of the weird ones. So I could see why folk would think that film just totally sucked and would be like, oh, that film sucks. But with Goodfellas, like, I can't see anybody going, like, even if you hated the film, you'd still be like, but I can see why people like it. Like, and so I don't think the reviews are far off from where it should be. Like, I don't think they're... I don't think anybody's wholly overrating it, and I've never seen a review where anybody's underrated.
I'm currently underrating it on this podcast.
You still gave it 3 out of 5.
I'm not being super harsh and gave it 1 out of 5. I'm no stupid. I can appreciate film. You know, I don't have to be into it. And you know, funny you should say that. You're talking about like when you say Big Trouble, you go out and you pick a film that you like and you stand by it. And having a conversation with somebody at my work today, and I was saying that, I asked them about their opinion of Goodfellas, and they were like, it's okay, I'm not really a gangster film person, and I'm like that. But he's got a point that's kind of, a lot of people say that it's their favourite film, or there'll be loads of people that say films like this, oh, it's my favourite film of all time. But his opinion is it really? There's not that many people that will stand on a hill like you and go, oh, it's Big Trouble. Or like Nick and go, I really love Flash Gordon, because it's not a great film. Mm. I think there's people that are too embarrassed to actually say, oh, by the way, this is my favourite film of all time. I think I've mentioned this in the podcast before. Ian was on the Quadrophenia episode. I was in the pub talking to him about films, and I think he listed his top five movies, and Jim Carrey's The Mask was number one. And then I had to kind of go, wait a minute. But then I've not seen The Mask for a long time, and it might actually be quite good.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good film.
Because I know that Jim Carrey had a moment for a wee bit in the early to mid-90s, so it might actually not be that bad.
Ace Ventura 2 is still real good. Ace Ventura 1's a bit iffy. Ace Ventura 2 is still pretty good.
Was that Nature Calls, the second one? Aye. When Nature Calls.
Oh, Ace Ventura sucks. Both of them suck, but like... Like, The Mask is, like, a genuinely good film. It's, like, one of Jim Carrey's best.
Not well received by contemporary critics is where we're at.
Well, it's... I think, especially for the time, like, this film was kind of changed the game a little bit. Like, it changed how gangster films worked, I think, yeah. Definitely. Like, this film was huge at the time. Like, imagine watching it, like, when... I mean, I wasn't alive, but, like... Imagine watching it at the time. Like, I think a lot of people's reception of this film, it still comes from when they originally watched it.
Oh, it's mad! Like, it's widely regarded as the best, or one of the best, if not the best, gangster movie ever made. Which, that's a hot topic for me as somebody who appreciates a good gangster film and really likes The Godfather. So yeah. Kenzie, you should watch The Godfather Part 2 if you weren't into the Part 1. I think Part 2 is...
Yeah, I was thinking
about
it.
Most people's favourite is that. But then again, if you don't like how long it is, you're probably going to struggle with 2, because it's kind of similar length and. Yeah, strange. Anyway, so yeah, that is a no. I mean, it was widely well received and is well regarded even to this day. Explores controversial topics, subjects, and themes. Now, depiction of mafia also. On screen, is it taboo is the wrong word, is it controversial, is it not, is it something that really should be glorified, highlighted? I suppose The Godfather was maybe more a glorification film of this is the way that you should be and it's great to be this way, whereas this is a bit more pragmatic where you've got somebody who eventually then snitches on all his friends and kind of becomes a witness protection guy, and it's like, so it is a bit of a curveball. It's not quite as just this is gangsters and this is how life is and this is how it should be and these are the codes that you should follow, and this kind of did change it up a bit, whereas Godfather was very definitively, if you cross paths then this is what happens and then there's no out, I suppose, and you should be in. And I feel as though with The Godfather, when you were in, it's very difficult to get out when you're in, isn't it, you know? Mm. Whereas this, maybe times had moved on and, you know, it's in a different time period and the whole becoming a rat, quote-unquote, an informant for the FBI or whoever's doing the work on these sort of people, maybe that became a bit more of an out for folk who maybe seen no way out. Like yous were saying earlier, like Henry maybe only done this because it was the only option that he had to stay alive.
I mean, yeah, it's like he literally says at the end of the film that he still misses like the kind of gangster life. Yeah. I think this film takes a very kind of grounded, kind of gritty look at the kind of gang. It kind of glorifies it in the start. I think I've actually had a few friends talk to me about like that the start part of the film, and like he goes into like the restaurant stuff like that, and they're all like kind of family stuff. Like I've had like friends come to say like that seems like a cool thing to actually have in your life and stuff like that. So I guess in a way that's kind of glorifying it, but then it also shows you the complete flip side of when you literally can't trust anyone. You might get whacked for like because Jimmy's just kind of scared that or.
Oh, he's just paranoid at the end of the film. Yeah. It just becomes a Nick kind of brought it up in the Godfather episode. How could you as soon as you start living a life like that, you would always need to have one eye over your shoulder forever, and that can't be a really nice way to live life. Unfortunately, do you know what I mean?
No. I think as well, like this film. I've not watched the Godfather and stuff in ages, but. This film kind of starts when, at the tail end of like the classical mafia kind of period, where it's all guys in suits. Like, see when he's introduced to it, it's all older guys in suits, and they're all like well dressed. And then by the end of the film, he's in the 80s and he's coked out his mind, and it's like a different style. And I think it kind of goes for like. And it does have that where you're like, you look at the bit at the start with the older guys and the gangsters and they're in the bar and they're getting the meals and stuff, and you're like, oh, that's really classical and cool. And then it gets to the 80s where everybody's out of control, he's on drugs, and you're like, oh shit, that's not cool at all. So I think it does take you on the journey for being like, yep, here's the kind of cool era and here's the not so cool era. Then when his life's wrecked and he's getting helicopters following him about and his brother's making pasta sauce and like, it's just it's a bit you definitely see that kind of like I think you get the good and the bad side at certain points.
Yeah, 100%, and it's quite overtly violent as well, this film. It makes kind of like no holds barred, and I suppose can you really make a true film like this and not make it as violent as this film is? Probably not. I don't think you could make a soft version of this kind of film, unfortunately. And I think a lot of people might not have wanted to go and see it. And maybe if this film, like, was mentioned previously, like, or maybe before we started recording properly, that if you'd cut a lot of the violence out, would this have just been like a weird melodrama
wasn't
really
TV
a gangster film
aye.
And really timid, and you wouldn't have had the right kind of balance. And I think that's kind of a difficult one to kind of wrap your head around. Well, and obviously
I'm not sure it's overtly violent. Like, I mean, you look at the other action films that were in that era, like it's not like a run and gun kind of like Total Recall or Robocop or one of those kind of
films. It's a subject matter though. I feel like it's like kind of dark, gritty, tries to be kind of real. It's more brutal.
It's the problem is it's based on true events. And I think that's the difference with something like Robocop, is kind of so fucking out there. And that was mentioned on the Robocop podcast, that's what Paul Verhoeven wanted. They made it more violent to make it funnier. And it did kind of achieve that, whereas in Total Recall and stuff like that are kind of the same. A lot of these kind of not A-list, sort of kind of B-list action movies that came out around the same time were quite violent, but they were almost funny, whereas this isn't a funny film.
True. Like
you can't really laugh at it, you know.
I suppose in this, Joe Pesci gets Joe Pesci gets shot in the head once in Goodfellas, where in a month later or a month earlier, he gets his head set on fire, he gets hit by a hammer. It's like,
and that's like a U or something like that.
I see what you mean.
No, but
it's like how they're shot as well. Like, you think of like the scene where like that guy gets like stomped on, like it's quite brutal, and it's like it kind of shows it, and it, like the aftermath is looking at him. Or the part that I always say it gets me that is quite brutal for this film is part when Joe Pesci stabs the guy in the back of the trunk.
Aye.
He starts stabbing him. Aye. And it's not like overtly like bloody or that, but it's just such a
you
kind
can
of brutal
see
way.
I think that's the big thing. It's like everything's on view. Like when they get out of the car and park up, you've got knife, somebody like, obviously Henry's going to pop the trunk and Jimmy's got the spade, and you can tell that, like, I mean, this is a whack. They're killing him. They're going to bury him somewhere out in the middle of nowhere and just leave him. And
there's an element of, like, almost horror film kind of menacingness about it, I suppose. Like, when you see, like, all the foreshadowing, like, the bit where he kills Spider, and
it doesn't,
like,
know how to get the blood on the floor. See the way he looks in that scene,
you could see that coming for, like, about 5 minutes, but or a couple of minutes before he kills Spider. Like, you can almost see the tension on the screen. Like, some shit's going to happen here, and it's not going to be good. And it's almost got you watching through your fingers the same way a horror film does, because you know it's coming.
I suppose that's,
you know,
why
coming, he,
Joe Pesci was incredible in this and won the awards that he did for the film. I mean. Yeah, right guy, right part. Gave him free rein to sort of do what he felt was right for the character, and it works. And aye, it has got that kind of element as well. He's becoming, it's kind of like an illness or a disease that goes over you, becoming part of the mob essentially. Look, I feel like the tangent for me would be Jack Torrance, Shining, Tommy DeVito, Goodfellas, and over a period of time, they're suddenly getting more and more and more and more insane and wrapped up in their own brain, and they just can't get out of it. He can't stop being him. He gets to a point where he's just got to kill everybody, and that's just the way it is. And on a weird note, I never knew that Samuel L. Jackson was in this film until I watched it. he gets whacked as by
particularly
Tommy.
Bloody shot, like that effect.
Are
is
you
like,
gonna,
so
you'd
bloody.
Be late to your own funeral and fucking shoot him in the back of the head. That's a lot of blood.
Can of paint.
I suppose it is controversial in its own way. I don't know about now, or it's quite hard to judge a film that's that old now. But in a weird way, it is. So we'll move swiftly on to the last one. It's cultural impact and legacy. We probably won't linger here too long. Kenzie's already brought up this kind of changed the game for these kind of films, and it probably set the precedent, and this is the film that everybody wanted to copy, and there's probably loads of films that are trying to be carbon copies of this and just never ever managed to do it as well.
I mean, yeah, it's like the 90s era of like gangster films. You could say a lot of it was just spurred on by Goodfellas. Yeah. I mean, Scorsese literally made Casino like afterwards, which 94. Is not the same, but it's kind of.
I think I might like it better than this film.
Casino's
more it's actually more violent.
I was mentioning to Johnny earlier that Billy Batts gets his revenge on Joe Pesci in Casino. Like,
stop calling him Pesci.
Joe Pesci, because it's funny.
He's doing it to be a dick.
And again, that's a is Casino on the list?
No, I don't know.
Not to spoil Casino too much, but that death is particularly brutal as well. Like,
so not like what, two people get taken out to like some boy and get like smacked with like metal baseball bats.
Basically, aye.
But see, I think the thing is this, right? So we're talking about the cutoff, right? We've done this in the podcast before. The films that were made in the '80s but released in the '90s weren't made for the '90s audience, and that's a lot of these films. And this could be. See if this was made 2 or 3 years later, I think it would have been more over the top.
Aye.
Because you had films like Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Natural Born Killers, Casino coming out, all of these where the people wanted that kind of film. And there was a market for it. Films like that sold in the 90s for a reason. There was a massive tonal shift even in just a short couple of years. And if you just didn't time your film right, you could have been in a hole that you could never have got yourself out of. This obviously still stands up. I mean, as much as I'm, like I said, I've got more opinions of it, but the consensus is so high for this film.
There's a coolness factor to this film that it is kind of undeniably cool, and I think without Goodfellas, you'd probably still get Reservoir Dogs, I suppose. But
I don't think you do.
But there's elements here, definitely Pulp Fiction's. Like,
I just don't think you get films like that without this film.
You don't get Grand Theft Auto. Well, definitely know the maybe one and two, like the top down ones you would still get, but once you moved it to 3D, you're not getting that without Goodfellas. Sopranos, as mentioned earlier, doesn't exist without Goodfellas. I'm sure even David Chase said that basically without Goodfellas there is no Sopranos. So it's not just films, like it's culturally pretty significant across the board, right?
Aye, definitely. I don't think you get a, you definitely don't get a Sopranos without this film. 100%.
I'm not even sure you get Jersey Shore the TV series without this film, if I'm being honest with you.
Mate, I don't know. You could probably argue a lot of things for a film like this. I mean, pioneering... The Godfather paved the way in a different way, and this kind of shook it up at the right time, I suppose. And things, film genres do get stagnant, and I suppose just, you're just looking for something to shake it up a bit. In terms of legacy that way, but it, you look at things, I mean, Goodfellas is in the top 100 American Film Institute's 100 Years, 100 Movies. AFI's 100 for 100. You know, it's apparently it's regarded as the number two gangster film of all time behind the original Godfather, not the second part. You've got loads, it's on loads of these lists. Like Jamie said about David Chase, he loved this film. There's so many things that you could say about this film. And yeah, I think it's hugely got a big legacy. And it probably cemented, like, I know Martin Scorsese was a big name before this, but just, he hadn't done a film like this, you know, and it maybe just moved his career, moved the needle a wee bit, and maybe this gave him another 10 years of making movies. And I suppose every 10 years, if he could make that one film that moves the needle again, it's like, I mean, do you get a film like The Departed without Goodfellas? I mean, I'm not really sure you do.
I mean, they're quite far different, but honestly, just, I don't think so.
It's strange when you think about it. Anyway, well, that is it for the rules section here at the podcast. I think we have said enough on that. We will now swiftly move on to Act 3 of the podcast, where we, based on the discussion we've just had, do we think it's a cult film? Does it tick enough of the boxes? And if it does it deserve a place on the top 100 list? Our individual, each person has their own individual list. So where are we standing here? Is it a cult film, Jimmy?
Nah, I don't think it's a cult film. A great film, yes, cult film, nah. It's too popular. The reviews are just too good. Like, it's too clear cut across the board that everybody kind of likes it. Like, that's like saying, or Man United, a cult football team, is Pepsi a cult drink? You're like, not really, no. Like, everybody kind of likes it.
Like, his Godfather's a Coca-Cola, but Goodfellas is a Pepsi.
Maybe Godfather's like Man City or something. I don't know.
But
you know what I mean? Everybody's heard the Goodfellas. It's not I was surprised when I seen it on the cult movies list, because I was like, you look at that list and there's films in there that I've never even heard of, right? And there's films that I've maybe heard of but watched maybe 20 years ago and haven't even been like, oh, I love that film, I need to go back to it. But Goodfellas, I'm kind of like, you might as well just have like Jurassic Park and like Avatar and stuff on there. Are they on there? I'm just looking at the list.
Just to clarify, we are sat in, say, quote unquote, my studio in the house, and the posters on the wall. Yes,
there is a lot. Star Wars on the list. I mean, that's like, you know what I mean? It's the same.
Somebody was trying to argue, I think Adam, who was on the Fifth Element episode for the listeners, he was trying to argue that the original Star Wars is a cult film. And I'm like, but see, if it had stopped at one, maybe you could argue that. Not now. There is no way you could have that argument.
This film being on this cult list is like, if, you know, like you get your American high school movies, like with the star quarterback, right, with the blonde hair and the big muscles, and it gets all the girls. If just one day he came in dressed as a goth, you'd be like, "Wait, what are you doing? Like, why are you hanging about with the goths all of a sudden?"
So, but it works. Like, it's the same. Like, The Godfather's also on the list. Like, we've already done that episode, and I mean, these are probably one, two, and three, top three. If you're looking at the top best gangster films ever made, they're the pantheon.
Reason they're on the list is because maybe the gangster genre is quite a niche genre compared to, is that maybe the reason they're on it, I suppose?
Well, but how though? Just, I mean, you've got three Godfather movies, you've got Scarface, you've got like Carlito's Way, you've got Goodfellas, I mean, you, the Untouchables, you've got anything with Al Capone, you've got... There is a lot. I mean, The Departed's kind of mob film. I mean, well, Mafia, maybe that might be the selling point. But if it's criminal, underworldy, mobby, there is a lot of those kind of films out there.
Go have to write to the people that made the poster and find out why that film's on.
Well, that, well, I didn't even buy the poster. It was a gift from my sister, your wife. We'll see if she...
Dear Mr. 100 Must-See Cult Movies, please explain yourself.
Dear Mr. Scratch Poster Maker. Kenzie, do you want to weigh in a bit?
It's definitely not... That's what I was about to say there. Definitely it's not a cult. It's not a cult film. I mean, it's literally getting held up to, like, people hold it up to The Godfather. And The Godfather's a classic. And you're holding Goodfellas up to it. It's not, like, surely that's kind of been called a classic as well. And I think it is. It's still, I think, although it's a lot newer, I think it is still seen as a classic film. 1990, but still, I mean, it's old. It is getting old now, kind of 30 something odd. For like a film, that's kind of quite old. Yeah, it's
a young
just
pop
not...
on the podcast, eh? 20 year old, whatever, 21.
I mean, I think films age faster than
people.
Tell
that to Martin Scorsese when he's aging, de-aging, re-aging, reimagining, regenerating, degeneration, all the iterations of people. He seems to
can't wait for his.
It seems to be his thing. James Cameron's out there developing underwater mocap technology for Avatar. Martin Scorsese's like, how can we make Robert De Niro look like he's 30, but he's actually 75? Because I really only want to work with him for the rest of my life.
I would definitely have worked.
I can't wait for his next film where he de-ages him to like 5 years old.
He's not in Killers of the Flower Moon, I don't think, is he?
No, I don't think so. I was just
Big Leo's Big Leo's coming back though. This is his new stud. This is taking over Robert De Niro's mantle. I think every Martin Scorsese now might only have Robert De Niro or Leonardo DiCaprio on it.
Oh no, can I let him start DiCaprio get involved, or he'll be wanting his girlfriend's de-age. That way he might not have to get a new one ever so often. She's 24, de-age her to 21.
Oh.
Apparently, I heard that he broke the chain. Is that true?
Let's not go into somebody's fucking like relationship history that we don't really know about. We don't even know if that's true, though. That's the thing. Like, I think it's became such an internet meme or internet story that people just believe what they read these days. Like,
nah, yeah, that's true. But I think it is true. I saw a video and it's like Lady Gaga accidentally like nudges into him. And he like freaks out, and the caption was, "What happens when Leonardo DiCaprio gets touched by someone older than 25?"
I know, I've seen that, but I think it's just daft. Anyway, I agree. I don't think it's a cult film. It's a classic piece of cinema now, much like if we're putting it in the conversation with The Godfather. Like Kenzie said, it probably deserves to be up there as a classic as well. So none of us are putting it on our top cult films list. I think the two guys that are on the podcast with me might have this in their top 100 films of all time, though. Quite comfortably, probably, with how highly they've rated it. I don't know. I think there's a lot of 3-star movies, and there's probably a lot of 4-star movies, so it might not make a top 100 for me, which is really strange to say out loud. But like I've said all this podcast, I'm on an island by myself, and I'm quite happy to be here. Leave me alone.
Aye, I mean, it's not on my top 100 cult films list because obviously I don't think it's a cult film, but it's probably my between 10 and 15, maybe 10 and 20, somewhere in the
top
10s.
Films ever. Yeah.
Like I really love it. Like, but I would say I've got films I watch more regularly than films I love, but it's up there though. It's definitely up there.
I thought it would be, and I mean, if you take out 9 Quentin Tarantino movies for 9 of Kenzie's favourite films of all time, try to think of other directors he likes. He's probably got a handful.
Honestly,
more.
I want to
take out all the
know.
Sigma films, so American Psycho, Drive, all of those, Taxi Driver. Add another 10 for that. So this is probably a top 30 film for you.
It's probably higher than that. I don't know.
Anyway,
like I really like the film, but it's probably if it, you know, I guess it might make it into my top 100. I would need to think about it. But when, if I think of my top 100 films, this is not a film I think of. But it is a very good film. But I don't know.
Like we've said, it's hard to put into perspective 100 of something. Look, do you know how long it made take me to make a 15-song playlist, man? It broke my brain. Like, I finally made one. But it's hard to consolidate lists when you start doing that. But anyway, we are digressing. No, it is not a cult film, and yes, it is a pretty good film. If you go by Kenzie and Jamie's thoughts on the movie, it's an amazing film. Go by mine, it's kind of middle of the road. But like I said, I am me. They are them. That is it for another episode of Cult Film Cafe. It's been a pleasure, as always. You know where to find us by now. And if you don't, just search for us on Google. We have a unique Google search, and we will pop up. Just search Cult Film Cafe, and you can find all of our amazing content there. We have a bunch of podcasts and an Instagram and a Twitter and a Twitch channel that you can go and give a wee subscribe to. And yeah, thanks, Jamie, for coming on again.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
And if you would like to check Jamie out on Instagram, he is now Mr. President of his Lawn Bowl Society.
Vice President of the local bowling club, yes. I'm officially becoming a very old man. I'm being aged. I'm going Martin Scorsese aged.
You're being aged. You're becoming an old man, which is quite funny because it's quite a juxtaposition considering your Instagram name, because you're actually a named after a guy, a young boy who likes to pick his nose.
I really should change that at some point. But my Instagram is Jamie_Wiggum, WIGGUM, like Ralph Wiggum for The Simpsons. So that's me.
That was it. On the episode details, I'll drop everybody's links if you want to go and give us all a check out, give us all a wee like, subscribe, all of that good stuff. So yeah, it's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from moi.
I ain't saying nothing.
Podcast out.